lower your expectations, and put on your comfy pants. You know the ones I'm talking about. It's time for the Mediocrities Podcast. Good morning. Well, it's morning for me. This is the Mediocrities Podcast. I'm your host, Mediocrities. Not the best, not the worst. Meh. Thinking of something new today. Actually, been thinking about it since I did the last episode, and that is philosophy and how much I really enjoy philosophy, but I'm surrounded by people that don't like philosophy. They really hate philosophy. I had roommates in college that hated philosophy. Let me tell you something. Philosophy is your best friend. You need philosophy. And before you say, hey, Mediocrities, I don't need philosophy. I just need theology. Just give me some Jesus. There's a sense in which your statement is absolutely true. We don't have to have philosophy to begin a relationship with Jesus. But let me tell you what. Philosophy is your best friend. And if you're thinking of philosophy as your best friend, then philosophy's sister is theology. And she's smoking hot. And the only way that you're ever going to get to talk to theology is for philosophy to be your best friend. You see theology walking down the halls at school, and you're like, man, she is unapproachable. She is that gorgeous and that popular and that wonderful and mysterious. She's not going to give you the time of day. But, dude, when philosophy is your best friend and theology is his sister, you're in, dude. Makes sense. She might even say hi to you in the hallway. How would that make you feel? So, study some philosophy. Once you get into philosophy, I'm telling you, man, it opens up all kinds of understanding to be able to not just know how to talk about theology. Hey, good morning. Not just how to talk to people and how to understand like deeper things, but just starting to see how the universe works. I mean, it's not like physical science or anything, but I don't know. Once I started studying philosophy, a lot of other stuff just made more sense. Learning how to build craft arguments, how to see the many and varied flaws of the people that argue against you. And sometimes it's even fun just to dismantle their arguments. In fact, probably one of my favorite philosophers to read right now is Thomas Aquinas, St. Thomas Aquinas. And what I like the most about St. Thomas Aquinas, in addition to him being just super smart, is the fact that he will take his opponent's arguments, and not only will he counter the arguments, no, Thomas Aquinas will take the person's arguments, their best arguments, he'll improve upon them and show them in the best possible light, and then he'll destroy them. You know, most people, when they're countering arguments, they look for the weakest points, and they try to show, you know, their absurdity or their weakness, right? Thomas Aquinas doesn't do that. He goes for their strongest points, and he tries to even make them look stronger than they would present them themselves. And then, in a sweet moment of intellectual and theological ecstasy, he destroys those weak arguments. I love Thomas Aquinas. I don't think that Thomas Aquinas was an argumentative or... Maybe he was argumentative. I don't think he was a prideful person. I think he was that smart that he was able to see through everyone's holes in their arguments. Anyway, philosophy. Guys, you got to study philosophy. I really think that it's worth your time. Let's do a commercial break. That sounds philosophical. Now it is time to journey inside the mind of Mediocrities. It may be fun. It may be scary. It may contain wheat and soy. Join me now, will you? Inside the mind of mediocrities. Yeah, okay, so mind of mediocrities today. Again, I'm going back to the sacred scriptures because I've got a lot of things on my mind right now. And, you know, let me just read this passage. In Galatians chapter 5, I'm going to start in verse 16, which, Feast of Pentecost, this may be your second reading. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. For the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. For those are in opposition to one another, so that you may not do the things that you please. But if you're led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. Now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmities, strife, jealousy, outburst of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these, of which I forewarn you, just as I have forewarned you, that those who practice such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. To those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live by the Spirit, let us also walk by the Spirit. Let us not become boastful, challenging one another, envying one another. So, you know, you can read through that list of all those sinful things, and you think, well, I don't do any of those things. Yeah, do you? Do you not? They kind of sum up every sin under the sun. And I know we can get really nitpicky. So you didn't mention my specific one, but in concept, everything that we end up falling into as human beings is there in that list. And here's the thing. It's easier. It feels more familiar. It may even feel like a big security blanket, especially if we have lived in habitual sin. You know, we have this temptation just to run back to the things that are most familiar to us. And for a lot of us, that's a sinful pattern, whether it's anger or drunkenness or drug abuse, or, you know, it could be anything. It could be, you know, binge watching The Nanny. I honestly don't know what your thing is. I'm not saying The Nanny's a bad show. I'm just saying, you know, if we spend an inordinate amount of time watching anything rather than trying to develop our minds and develop our brains, then, you know, it's wasted time. We only have 24 hours in a day. But that's not what the topic is today. The topic is sin and how easy it is to fall into sin, how easy it is for us to not do the right thing all the time. And honestly, when I look around and I look at my workplace, or I look at the people that I run into at the Walmarts or wherever I happen to be, it seems like the people that are not living visually, let me just quote that, visually godly lives, seem to not be having any problems at all. But I seem to be having all the problems, you know? And that's hard. That's hard to swallow if you're a, you know, if you're trying to do the right thing, you're trying to live right, and it just seems like just everything just piles up, you know? And I bet I'm not the only person that feels this way. You know, when there's an old hymn that talks about this exact same concept, well, while, you know, there are people living around us that are living wickedly, and yet it doesn't seem like anything bad ever happens to them. And when are we ever going to see justice? When are we ever going to see them get theirs and us get ours? You know, the song is farther along because it's not going to happen right now. Justice is God's. You know, the sorting out of the sheep and the goats, that's God's job. My job is not to sort you out. My job is to be faithful. Your job is to be faithful. And sometimes I don't want to be faithful. Sometimes it's easier just to kick my feet up. Sometimes it's easier just to take my feet off the gas and coast. Maybe it's easier just to lay down because I'm tired, or to just give in and lose my temper, or be lazy, or, you know, say rude things or think bad things, because the normal activity of the devil is to tempt us to do that kind of stuff. That's what demons do, is they tempt us. And we certainly fit in a lot better when we do these things, when we give in to the sexual immorality of the day, when we don't question anything. We don't ask people, you know, why they are doing the things they do. We don't bring up the fact that a lot of the things that are popular today are directly contrary to God's law. We don't bring up any of that stuff, right? But yet here we are, and we're in a world, in a society that is post-Christian. It doesn't acknowledge God. It doesn't follow God. It doesn't really care. It just wants to do its own thing. And it believes that it can operate with impunity. Because guess what? Right now, apart from a few examples, people are getting away with it. People are living. Now, they're receiving in themselves a lot of times the punishment for their sin. You know, if you cheat on your taxes and you get caught, yeah, there's jail time for that. Meanwhile, there are murderers that are going scot-free. It's just, it's difficult to see injustice and to not at least question your efforts. So what are we supposed to do about that? You and me, we're supposed to pursue the fruit of the Spirit. We're supposed to be living lives that are led by God, led by the Spirit of God. And that produces love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Nowhere in any of those items is there selfishness, is there me time, is there let's take care of what I want first. That Tesla that I want so bad, it's not in this list. Not if it comes at the expense of something I'm supposed to be doing. So what am I pursuing? What is at the very beginning of that is love, which is complete and total self-giving. That's what love is. Love is not sentiment. Love is not feelings. Love is not, I just feel like doing this. You know, your feelings are deceptive. Your feelings can be manipulated. Well, so can your will, right? But we're supposed to will the good of the other. That's what love is. Love is not selfish. Love doesn't take, you know, itself first. Love doesn't do nice things just so other people will do nice things back to us. Then that's kind of the deal where we're at, where we are right now. I think this world is telling us the complete opposite of these fruits. And when we practice them, an interesting thing will happen, I think. At least I observe from people that are much more faithful than me. The world notices them. And then the world starts throwing rocks at them. The world starts digging to try to find some dirt for these people that are trying to live their faith. God bless them. It's going to get even harder for them to live. Yet God calls us to faithfulness. God calls us to trust. God calls us to listen and obey and wait for our daily bread. And we want so much just to be in control and just to do whatever we want to do and just have everything laid out in front of us that we know what to expect and we can just relax and take our ease. And he says, no, I'm sorry. I need you to do this. And what we don't really see is what's happening supernaturally and maybe even physically. I mean, think of it this way. I'm not the most in shape guy, okay? And I used to do a lot of sports, but then life, you know, and that's my excuse. It's not a good one. But I got too busy and I stopped exercising and I started gaining weight. That happens to more people than just me, right? So what happens when I go to the gym? I go to the gym and I'm going to hit the treadmill or maybe I want to hit a machine or something like that. It is not easy. In fact, if I do it for a while, I may notice water running down from my head and coming out of the pores of my body. It's called sweat, right? And it smells because it's bringing bacteria to the surface of your skin. But
if I'm doing that long enough, I will start to see physical changes in my body, but not before there is pain, not before there is soreness, not before there's effort. And all of that comes from an exercise of the will. So I'm not going to lose weight until the number of calories I burn every day exceeds the number of calories I consume. I'm not going to become more well-read until I'm reading. I'm not going to become holier until I practice the things of God and reject the things of the world. This is not new information to you. It's not new information to me. It's just my own kick me in the butt that this is what I've got to be doing. And look, if that's you, you may be listening to this and you are perfect and you got everything together and you're judging me. And honestly, thank you, Jesus, for this person who has it all figured out and has it good. And I pray that they will pray for me and pray that I will become as holy as I ought to be. And for everybody else that struggles like I struggle, I need you to pray for me too. And I want to pray for you. Did you know that if you're listening to me on the Anchor app, you can actually leave me a voice message. I just discovered that today. You can leave me a voice message, and I'd love to do that if there's a way that I can pray for you, or if you have questions or things you want to, comments you want to leave for the show, things you want me to address, I guess we'll go ahead and plug that. Then do that, or shoot me an email at mediocritiespodcast@outlook.com, and, I'm not going to put your stuff on the air, but I will pray for you if you'll promise to please pray for me. In the meantime, Jesus is telling us here through St. Paul's letter to the Galatians that we need to crucify those sinful desires. We don't need to want what the world wants. We don't need to go after what the world wants us to go after. You know, you always hear people talk about follow your conscience. I'm going to vote my conscience. Look, conscience is not infallible. Your conscience is not infallible. And if you formed your conscience to follow things that oppose God's laws and oppose what God has given us as reality, then you're living in sin. Your conscience is leading you to sin. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, and I'm not being political here, although you can definitely apply this to politics. But we have to be willing to admit that the things that we want or the things that we feel may not always be right. And just because we feel them and just because we want them doesn't mean that we should have them. Or that if they are not bad things, if they're good things, it may mean that we're not supposed to have them now. So we have to trust God. I have to trust God that there's a reason why things are the way that they are. And there's really nothing I can do about that except the one thing that I can change, the one thing that I can control is my will. The one thing you can change and the one thing you control is your will. You can't change the will of the person next to you. You can't change your husband's will. Can't change your wife's will, your fiance's will, your kid's will. You can't make people do things. You can manipulate them and you may get them to conform to some behavior that you want, but it's not going to change their heart. Only they can change their heart, and that's through cooperation with the heart of God. Only they can change their will. God won't even change their will. He's given them that free agency. So you and me, let's do our best just to reject the popular whatever and to seek God and seek His face and look for Him and pray for each other and try to be patient for that jackhole that really gets on your nerves. And pray, don't pray that God will drop rocks on their head. Pray that God will bless them. And that person that gives you so much pain and irritation in your life, pray that God will bless them and give them a good day. Pray that God will give you additional peace as you interact with people that you don't want to interact with. And that doesn't mean it's going to get easier. I don't think it does get easier. I do think that the stores of grace that we have inside are there to help us to encounter it. And I tell my son this because we like to talk about sports, but it's like when a coach if you're in the practice and coach is making you go through that last set of calisthenics, and he says, give me 10 more reps, and you don't think you've got 10 more reps in you, but coach knows you've actually got more than 10 reps in you, but you don't think so. You've got to be the one to push through that mental barrier in your brain and will your body to do those extra 10. And once you've done that extra 10, he may ask you for more just because he knows that you've got the stuff in you. And God has given us the grace to do the things that he's asked us to do. And we get that mental block. We think, I can't. I just want to give in. I just want to give up. We can't. We need to push and give those other 10 more reps. And even if things don't get easier from there, we are building up endurance and we are building up strength in ways that we probably can't see right now. And building that capacity for patience and love and peace and joy and all the things that God is talking about there in Galatians. Anyway, you're not alone. You're not alone. I'm not alone. Trust in God. Follow him and don't make any room for the world's ways. Just trust Jesus. Remember that picture of the divine mercy, right? Jesus, I trust in you. Just make that your daily prayer. You and me both. And don't forget, hey, how you doing? Don't forget to pray for me, and I'll be praying for you. Hey, so the last segment, something old. Here, we're going to jump into the Wayback Machine for a minute. Back when I was a kid, I used to be a hot dog vendor in an SEC football stadium. And listen, as a kid, being a hot dog vendor was the easiest way to get tickets into a game. And I loved watching my team play, hometown boy, love watching my team play. And so selling hot dogs, okay, sell hot dogs. And so because of my connection to hot dogs and selling those in the stadium, to this day, when I go to a ballpark, it doesn't matter if I'm there for a football game or a baseball game or whatever, if they're selling hot dogs in the concessions, I have to have one. I just want one. And I've seen how hot dogs are cooked. I used to work in the kitchen. You know, that's where you go to get restocked. I've even seen a guy stick his whole head inside the hot dog cooker. And it was interesting. I think he was high. But, you know, even though I've seen all that, I know there's nothing really special about the dog. There's just something about eating a hot dog in a stadium. And it brings back good memories for me. And sometimes weird memories. And that's what I'm going to share with you today. So there was this one time. And this was a long time ago, but I'm in this stadium. It's a big stadium. And I was not in my zone. We all had zones we were supposed to work. And I was trying to beef up sales because where I was in this the upper deck of the south end zone, nobody was really buying anything. And I only make 10 cents a hot dog. And I have to make enough in my sales in order to pay the kitchen back for the two hot dogs I'm going to eat that day and a Coke. So I got to make sure I'm selling my coolers a hot dog. So here I am wearing my baby blue shirt that says hot dogs, $1.50, right? I'm wearing my shirt and people are saying, hey, what you got in the cooler? I'm pointing to my shirt. It says hot dogs, $1.50. How much are they? I point to my shirt again, $1.50. You know, it's the same price across the stadium. I'm selling these dogs anyway. I was in a zone that was not my zone. And at that time they had seats in certain places down in the end zone, which, you know, if you're looking at most football stadiums, there's like that retaining wall where the players kind of, if they ran too hard, they'd run into it right on the backside of the end zone. Well, that's also where shot clock. That's where the play clock is also at this time in history. And so in between two of the sections where some people were sitting was the play clock. And I wasn't paying attention where I was. I was standing in front of the play clock and I was yelling up to, you know, those sections of people for hot dogs. You want to buy a hot dog. And people were yelling at me and I thought, man, these people just do not like hot dogs. I didn't realize it. And I recall that I almost caused a delay of game because the quarterback couldn't see the end zone. So I keep telling myself, no, surely I didn't do this. Surely that didn't happen, because there were other places, including the scoreboard, where the actual play clock can be seen. But anyway, I do remember being screamed at and lots of wonderful choice words coming at a child, coming directed toward a child by screaming adults who did not buy any hot dogs from me. Working down there did not work out very well. So I decided just to kind of keep in my section. But I did learn a trick after that week, that the best sales that I had came from the student section, where several people were usually inebriated and would buy anything. And the other section was the visitors section, on the opposite side of the stadium and also in the upper deck, where it was, more cool. So on the upper deck, I was able to sell to the opposing team's fans. So my team's fans, not so great, unless they were inebriated, and students, and then the rest were the visitors. But yeah, selling hot dogs. And maybe from time to time, I will drop back into some hot dog days and give you some old memories. But that was one that was kind of on my mind. So, and thanks to Jeff for jogging my memory about the hot dogs. He's always begging me to tell him hot dog stories for whatever reason. But yeah, there you go. So anyway, hey, thanks for joining me today. I look forward to the next episode, which will probably be dropping in a few days. Until then, be kind and continue to pray for each other and encourage each other as long as you're breathing. Thanks.